Like I had gone through a phase of doing therapy and also understanding the several parts that we have, you know, within our minds. You know, I translated that into a dance piece. And I think at that time, I really couldn't think of doing something about joy or doing something about another emotion, but it actually had to be quite vulnerable in that sense because I hadn't spoken about it openly. But in a way, I found making a work about it just, it helped me to take a step away and make that piece. It had helped me to understand it in another way.
Welcome to the third episode of the Ikivi Podcast Season 3. In this episode, we have with us Vidya Patel, a Birmingham-based movement artist and performer. She has been training in Kathak from a very young age and takes influence from various languages and experiences of working with a diverse range of artists within dance, music, and visual arts. Her work focuses on autobiographical narratives, drawing on themes of identity, belonging, and empowerment. In this conversation, we speak with her about her journey into the dance world, what influenced her passion for Indian classical dance, and how she transitioned into being a movement artist and choreographer. We speak with her about the connection between mind and body, how emotions can impact movement and vice versa, and how one releases tension and emotional trauma. We look forward to you being a part of this conversation. Thank you so much, Vidya, for joining us today. I am very excited, like I just mentioned, very excited about this conversation. To kind of dive into the mind and body connection and what that means, we've had several conversations on just our mind and consciousness and living more mindfully that I feel like we tend to forget sometimes about the mind and body connection and what and how intertwined all of that is. So I definitely want to hear your thoughts on it, especially because you are this amazing dancer. But before we all begin getting into all of those details, can you share with us a little bit about your journey into the dance world, you know, with your passion for Indian classical dance, and then how you kind of transitioned into being a movement artist and choreographer?
Of course. Yeah. Firstly, like, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. And it's wonderful to see all the work that you're doing also about sustainability and its interconnectedness with everything in the world. And it's, yeah, I think sustainability as well, even though as a dance artist, I think everything that you're mentioning with the mind and the body, again, like sustaining is so much part of like that connection that we have with our mind and body. And it also like brings up questions for me, like how do we sustain a career, whether it's, you know, art or corporate world, how do we sustain ourselves within that sort of momentum of life as well? So yeah, these are like constant questions that are always coming up about sustainability. And I guess my journey into dance itself, it was quite like organic. I was going to classes. My mom and dad had put me and my sisters into a lot of Indian classical dance classes when we were growing up. Again, you know, born in Birmingham in the UK, and my mom being born in Mumbai, my dad being born in Kampala, like they wanted us to be connected to some sort of like culture. So it was literally what was local to us. So we did like Bharatanatyam, then we did Kathak, then we did like Bollywood, then we did semi-classical. But we were always like just busy with performing or, you know, connecting with other people through that. And I think that was very much part of our life, like just growing up and enjoying that, or, you know, just getting together and doing a dance for a community event or some festival. So it was always just like part of our lives in that way, and was a great like way to spend like our weekends and, you know, enjoyment of it really. And I think I've just seen my sisters grow up doing that, and then I really wanted to continue and sort of be like them, being like the youngest sister. So it was just through, like, I guess, different programs that came up. Like, definitely in Birmingham, there was like one which supported young dancers getting a flavor and getting a glimpse into what professional careers could look like. So we would go in residencies, learn from other artists. And I think that was when I really met like one of my teachers, and she really showed me and encouraged me to be like, yeah, you can take this as a career. And before that, really, no, I didn't really, I could see so many artists, but I think in terms of me, I hadn't had that thing of being like, oh yeah, could maybe take it as a career, you know. And I loved it as well. So it was through there, and then just lots of different sort of steps that took place, sometimes by luck or by chance or being at the right place at the right time, and then also molded with like just training and hard work and I guess commitment. And I think something that makes me continue doing it today is actually just trying to sustain that momentum, like with my curiosity. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, a bit of a broad
No, it of course
segue into it.
it of course it does. Nowadays we see a lot of people, especially in our generation, that a lot of people are choosing these alternate careers. Prior, the previous generations, of course, didn't have didn't even think of the idea of doing any of this. It was just the engineer doctor kind of route that everybody would take. But it's so interesting that we're all kind of choosing what we want to do. And making a career out of it. What was it like for you when you kind of decided that this is something that, you wanted to do? Was it easy? Was it difficult? Because there possibly was no set path prior to you doing it. Has it been easy enough for you to, adopt it as a career choice? And what kind of pathway would you recommend for future artists, wanting to do these kind of making these kind of career choices?
So I think sometimes the hardest part is first thinking that you're going to like do this. I think knowing also my peers and who maybe have, taken this route of going into it with a lot more like commitment. They've also felt this like that's a hard decision to make in itself. But then once that happens, not to say that, yeah, but also it's easy to think about it. And I think there's nothing like an overnight change that happens. Like you wake up in the morning and almost great, I've got it all sorted, That is never the case. And even though I've been doing freelance for a while now, like it's nearly like 10 years since I've been freelancing, and it's never the same. And I think that's what's exciting about it. It's unpredictable, but it is very rewarding. And I think the fact that I can do this, I feel, yeah, there's a privilege, definitely a privilege in that I can express myself through art and dance and music. And it's not everywhere in the parts of the world that you can do that. So I, yeah, take it as a very like, yeah, special thing that I am able to do this. But also it, I guess it comes with like a responsibility as well, like responsibility to what do you want to sort of say with it? What is it that you're trying to do that can connect to other people? And I think that's how I like to see like the work that I create or express. It's like, what am I doing with that? Who am I connecting it to? What am I saying with it? And I think, yeah, asking those questions has evolved the way that I look at what I create or share. And in many ways, like through when I first began and now, like there's a vast difference of what I may perform or what I'm interested in, but it's very curiosity based as well, my practice. And I think to come back to your question, like, yeah, there was not a path like before. And I think for all artists, it's so individual. And what I found helpful was seeing like my peers or maybe artists who have some relevance to me In terms of like representation, what have they done, but also totally diversifying and taking a person who is like not in my field of dance, and maybe it's music or film, and seeing actually like, yeah, what steps have they made? What is interesting about their lifestyle, or what is interesting about their schedule? Whether, you know, with Indian classical training, there's not a conservatoire. It's more you go, you learn from your teacher, you come. So I've gone through that route. I didn't really go to a school. Whereas like here, like in the UK, you have various conservatoires, which now are much more open in terms of the requirements. You don't need just ballet to be able to enter that. They have become a lot more broad. So having trained in just Kathak, you would be able to apply for them. But when I was applying, it wasn't the case of, you know, being as open. And also, I don't think I felt as confident to do that. And I think I had applied for a few dance university courses. But then when I got accepted, then I kind of didn't feel that was for me. Like that, you know, sometimes with education, education is so important, but sometimes the restrictions of it, or the goals and aims of a certain institution, I feel sometimes can be hindering to my expression. But also they can at the same time elevate your expression in such a different way. So I think it's so different, like for each individual. So yeah, I had declined some offers and then just chose to go like full time for a year and test it out. And there were like opportunities that came my way in that year that really opened me up to what was possible. But then also that thing of like establishing connections, and also like just seeing your friends and seeing what they've done. And I think when I was early on, I used to like look at schedules for training conservatoires of like contemporary dancers and be like, oh, if I was to make that for me, what would that look like? And I would try and like experiment with that, you know. It would last for a certain period of time and then I'd try, but there'd be remnants of that still keep with me and end up as my practice. So it's almost like looking and observing and learning. And like my first like touring job as well, and being in a company of like such beautiful dancers, of like 10 contemporary trained dancers, and it was a company called Richard Alston Dance Company that I was with, and I was touring with them. And it was really a beautiful experience to be able to be in that environment of like an established company and see how it operates, but also see how rehearsals are done, like also studio etiquette, what is that like, you know. I hadn't been in an environment like that before, so it was almost how much can you observe is something that I would always say. And also just being really like genuinely curious about something, like being curious about music if that's part of your work, like how can you see different artists, your friends and colleagues and peers. Like I would say just take genuine interest in what is happening, in where you would like to see yourself, and then learning about it, you may find things that you're like, oh, I would have loved to see this, or I maybe didn't enjoy that as much. And then you can craft what is your likes, dislikes and stuff like that. But I'd definitely say just take a lot of interest.
Yeah. What does your typical day kind of look like, and what is the body of work that you are engaged in at this point?
Sure. So like it's always changing. Like I've just come out of like a period of like making work for a particular company. And then now, like for the next 2 months, I'm focusing on my training. So I feel like when I'm directing or choreographing, it's a lot of like thinking, doing, but then not performing as much. So it is like now a moment of like just taking sort of reflection and getting into my body much more, like with rigor and practice, and sort of going back to my Kathak training and really just going through that in a way which is like helpful for me. And also like right now it's a moment of like, yeah, trying to get organized. So it's very admin based as well. So it's almost like training alongside like admin planning and sort of sorting out like the next few years of what it is that I want to do with that time, because like there's a few things that have come to an end that were probably like 2 years on the go. So it's a bit of a wrapping up and also like dreaming, visioning for what's next as well.
Nice. So to go into the art form, can you tell us a little bit about the connection between movement and emotions and what that means? You do talk about your performance and generally the art form being very deeply connected to emotions and how that kind of influences the way your body moves.
I think always like with dance movement, not necessarily that there's always an emotion involved, but it might be something that's said, it might be something that's not said. But I think with movement, because like it's coming through the body, there is always some sense of emotion that is linked to it. And I think for me as an artist, not that I'm in various ways, sometimes I'm musical led, sometimes I'm visual arts led. I like seeing like paintings and stuff like that, seeing how that can inform a work. And it's very dependent on what I'm feeling at the time, like especially with what I create. Like it might be a broad feeling that I've had, say, over a year, and that may input that emotion or experience would probably inform like a work, because a lot of my works are autobiographical as well. I think emotion does have a large part to play in it. Sometimes it's more in the broader sense of like informing a choreographic work or thinking of how I would like to make people feel. But also emotion, like within the studio room and the processes, I think is like really important for me as someone who's leading spaces. And what I mean is like, yeah, what emotions are there present in the space? Like when you're on a day-to-day basis, like is someone having a really bad day? Someone, there might be a bereavement in the family or something like that. It's like, how can we almost hold space together? But then also, we've still got a job to do and we've got to be productive. But I think at the end of the day, like I do try and just be a lot more human with dance work, because it comes from the body, everything is connected. And it's like, if someone needs to take a break, go take that break. Like you don't need to be in rehearsal. And I think that's one thing like I find with dance as well, like because as freelancers as well, often you don't have like sick pay or you don't have like bereavement pay. Like, in usual corporate jobs, you can say, oh, I've had a, this has happened in the family, or can I take days off work or this. We don't have that in dance. So I think it's like, how can you? It's almost like we have to be even more aware if you're leading a space. And I think definitely I am. So I feel you've got a responsibility of those people in the space. How are you caring for them? Not in like, oh, that sort of, like not in a motherly way. It's more like caring for that space and that energy and that creativity, because everything does then inform what is created in the space as well. So I think, emotions. I'm quite like a sensitive person as well. So if I feel like there's something maybe not feeling, just taking time to discuss, like, what is it? How can we make this more fruitful? How can we make this good for everyone? Sometimes it's not always possible to do that, but I think the more and more I'm in places of where I can direct or be be leading a space. I'm trying to be really conscious about that.
So you're talking about this in a studio, right? Like when you're directly taking a class with people who are like regular people, or is it specifically with professional dancers that you're speaking to?
Yeah, specifically, I guess, with professional dancers. I guess like this past year, it's been more when like different, I've been working with different dance artists in different spaces. Sometimes I may know them, sometimes I may not know them. Sometimes I may be going into a university and there's a lot of dance artists, and again, they might be graduating, and that's a big deal as well. So yeah, just trying to be conscious of like, yeah, you have the responsibility of leading this space, but also what is important for them in this, like, say, a graduating performance. If I'm choreographing for that, this is like their final piece that they're going to be displaying before they go into the professional world. So firstly, does it really show them in terms of all of their skill, what they're capable of doing? Is the choreography allowing that? Is that collaboration allowing that? So I think in different spaces, like, there is a lot of responsibility, and it's good to always be adaptable to that as well. And I know we've come off on a tangent, but I think the like underlying thing of this really is like the care in not only just seeing your intention and output of this, but actually what is the other person's experience, whether it's a collaborator, whether it's a dance artist that you're working with. And to be honest, even dance artists, they are collaborators within the work. And I think now I'm trying to be more specific, like, you know, how much do dance artists collaborate within the work? Is it, because some studios you may go to, you're generating a lot of work for choreographers, but in some spaces, like, you are taught a lot of it. So I think there is a spectrum of how much collaboration is done. And I think as a dance artist or as a person leading the space, you should always try and be as clear as you can about that, because one might have a tendency towards one or preference towards the other, but also it's good to let people know about that.
So to kind of move the conversation to non-dancers, and to talk about the experience that people have with regular people like us have with movement. I myself used to dance a little bit in school, and it was something that gave me, like, it's like exercising, right? Like if you exercise and you feel good after that, I feel like with dance, there is that aspect of it as well, especially because there's music involved and music has this therapeutic angle quality as well. But there are a lot of times now as we kind of grow up and have other lives that we're, other parts of our lives that kind of take over, we feel like this tension in our body, and it comes with a lot of stress, and it comes with a lot of like daily activities that we do. And dance is known for its therapeutic qualities. Is there any specific movement or that you feel that helps people kind of release that tension or pain, or kind of get their body moving, or even if it's as intense as, you know, kind of processing emotional trauma, is there some particular kind of movement that people can try and do to do that?
So in terms of like my dance practice, obviously like dance and movement in itself, like as you said, that movement generates endorphins, like, and also particular hormones are sort of activated when that happens as well. So like general movement, it doesn't have to be anything specific. Even to be honest, just going for a walk is just brilliant. Moving, and again, depending on how and what is accessible to you, like what does movement mean to you and how will you adapt that in your way? Like, again, sometimes you will need to sort of just take, I think sometimes that time to reflect on how your body feels sometimes isn't there for everyone because their schedules are like back to back. But there will always be like some nugget of time that you can give for it. So I think sometimes just like being present with your body In terms of whether it's sitting in silence, sitting listening to some music, or just being in nature and experiencing like the elements, is mm-hmm. something that can be so so powerful. And it doesn't have to be like a dance routine or anything like super complex. I think the simplest of things can be so powerful in itself.
Thank you for listening to the Ikibi podcast. If you are enjoying listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikibi.com. That is IKKIVI.com. We are a small sustainable business supporting contemporary Indian brands. Our platform is run by an all-women team handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country, all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here, and let's get back to our episode.
To kind of go into it a little deeper, I personally feel like I do want to shake things off. Like, you do want to kind of move. But for some reason, at least, okay, from my personal experience, I feel stuck. Like, I don't know if I need to follow somebody dancing on a screen and try and kind of follow those movements. Because if I go to a dance class, for example, then I know exactly what steps I need to do. So that's a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're trying to, like, in your room, playing loud music and trying to dance, I'm like, I catch myself a lot of times just moving. You know how you dance in, like, bars and clubs, just like tap left right, like that ends up happening, and you're like, this is not dancing. Like, how does that, like, how do you get yourself out of that funk? Because I do know a lot of people, and I've spoken to a lot of people about this, like, you're in that, you're stuck, you don't know how to kind of move more. I don't know whether it's kind of emotions holding you back or fear of some sort, or, you know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think definitely, like, emotions is a big one that can make you stop, or like fear, like fear of doing something. I guess it's different for everyone. And to be honest, even a dance that is simple, like, you could take that to an extreme level and make it faster. You could make it like super complex. You could add a few things into it and make it your own thing. Whether it's like changing direction, adding a bit of a motif to it. And I think that in itself is more, I found myself being less judgmental of myself can help me free myself more. You know, even if you're in your bedroom and you're doing dance, like, how do you free yourself of your self-judgment? Because there's actually no right, or then there's no wrong. And it is just you. No one's going to be able to do it like the way you do it. So I think sometimes it's that relieving yourself of that judgment. And it, you know, I think sometimes with social media, I love the fact that it can connect us to so many people. But at the same time, it's almost like, oh, if there can be that thought of like, oh, this isn't, you know, something that I can share, or this isn't something that's of the top quality and things like that. But how do we go back to our like rooted ancestry that we may have? They never had so many other people to compare themselves with, because the digital age wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I think a big thing also can be with, like, we know so much, we've seen so much, that it can also be like, oh my God, I don't know that. Or I would love to know that, I can't do it. Or not good enough sort of thing could come into play.
And yeah,
I think I've always found it really helpful to try and relieve myself of that judgment. But also try and understand, like, what is going back, what's trying to hold me back here. Like, and yeah, just try and let go in some way. You know, I don't know what that is for everyone. It's going to be very, very different.
Yeah. Have you had any performance or a particular movement or anything in particular where you've been influenced heavily by, say, a strong emotion or, you know, when it significantly kind of shaped some aspect of your routine or something like that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I guess there's been lots of instances. I think always as a performer, there's going to always be that element of pairing like emotions to the movements. But obviously that's once you've rehearsed it and then once you're really in it in terms of performing and finding intention of what that is, what that movement is for you, what it may mean in the context of the choreography. Mm-hmm. But in several ways, like sometimes like a theme of a piece, I might not be in it, but the emotion will be heavily connected to, say, a personal experience, whether that's of like dissociation, that can happen. And that's like the disconnect of your mind and your body. And like I had gone through a phase of doing therapy and also understanding the several parts that we have, you know, within our minds. And it was really interesting information that was then, you know, I translated that into a dance piece. And I think at that time, I really couldn't think of doing something about joy or doing something about another emotion, but it actually had to be quite vulnerable in that sense, because I hadn't spoken about it openly. But in a way, I found making a work about it, just it helped me to take a step away and make that peace. And obviously that was, I've been doing therapy for a long time then, and it had helped me to understand it in another way. So, you know, I wasn't in the depths of the feeling that I needed to, you know, in order to get therapy. I wasn't in that state, but I had come out of it. Mm-hmm. And was then able to express myself in that way. So I think, yeah, that a piece that I've made, it was called Don't Mind Me. And it was like premiered on the Sadler's Wells Theatre main stage with a cast of 5 dance artists, and there was a lot of collaborators involved. And yeah, for me, it was just very positive experience to be able to do that.
Is there any place that people can watch this performance?
Do you know, at the moment, I haven't found a place, but that is a very good question, because maybe I need to do like an online, like live streaming of it one of the days, and it's watched online. I think that's a very good idea, Vivian. I think maybe in the new year, keep a lookout on my socials. There might be something.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like when you hear these stories about a particular performance, it's so much more like you look at it with a different set of eyes. And that's exciting to kind of see how, so here's this story and here's this piece and here's what the artist means by it. But do you perceive it the same way? Do you take something else from it? I think that that's very exciting. So if this episode hasn't been released yet, and if you are doing, you know, a live performance or something of that sort, we definitely would love to link it in our description or something like that, definitely, so people can take a look at it for sure.
Thank you.
Yes. So to talk about the industry and the challenges that artists face, what are your thoughts on the unrealistic body standards, and how can one tackle that?
Yes, there have been like certain standards that have probably been like seen as like the ideal, in inverted commas. But now there is a lot more discussion and conversation on how can we represent further, so that you question what are those ideals, and actually who made those ideals in the first place? Why were they that way? And sometimes there's so many constructs that were in place that have made that, including, you know, structural racism, how people, you know, undermine certain groups and communities of not probably being that ideal. And I feel now there's a lot of beautiful work that is being created, and artists are making sure that their work is a lot more representative of various stories, various experiences, various people of various backgrounds. And I feel in that way, that notion of what is ideal is definitely being questioned through artistic practices and artistic work that is coming out. And even in, yeah, like my work as well, it's like, I want to make sure more people who say look like me or come from a underrepresented background are really shown and seen in my work, but not only just for that reason, but it's because they're exceptional at what they do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel as a, you know, a lot in the past as well, I know people have talked about it, but being a person of color in a space, it's almost like excellence is the only thing that is that you must be.
Yeah.
Because firstly, you should be grateful to be in that space. Again, in inverted commas, like, and I think it's good to be grateful, but more and more you are providing something of your experiences and your background, and you also come with so much to give. So I think there is definitely exchange rather than just like a one-sided gratefulness of being in a space that maybe you have not seen people like yourselves in before. So definitely that. And I think, yeah, how we approach that place with like responsibility when you're in places of leadership or in a place that you can bring up these conversations, how do you advocate for others, not just yourself? And I think when you advocate for more people and more voices and more representation, that's when these ideals and notions of, you know, what is it to mean to be a good dancer, what does it mean, like, what does that look like? And I feel like that's when those things will really be questioned, is when you make space for voices that may not have been there, but then also give them the chance to develop. And I think like developing or honing, like, and being able to pass on information is really important, and being able to bridge that gap between, yes, they may have lack of experience, but why is that lack of experience there? It's also because of the societal structures that are in place that that person may not have had an opportunity to receive that information. So actually, now that you've identified that, what things are you going to put in place to make sure that they're able to develop and progress in their career to, say, someone of a white background who may have had that opportunity? And it's not always that way that, you know, those developing opportunities may be there. So sometimes as an artist, you need to find those and be like, okay, is that, can I be mentored by a certain person who has that experience? Or someone that I can speak to and gain that insight into a certain industry. I think it's really important to think about the collective rather than your individual self progression. Because, yeah, what's the point then if it's just you who are, who's doing well, and your peers as well?
And I think that with collective action, even in this industry, you're able to kind of break down those barriers and kind of reset those standards and invite more people into the community as opposed to kind of keeping people away.
Definitely. It's like trying to demystify what this career looks like as well, because people might not know how to enter it. Like in the pandemic, I created this group. It was called South Asian Dance Artists UK, but if anyone who is interested in the dance styles, have maybe come from a South Asian heritage, or, you know, are just wanting to receive information, being part of this group, regardless of their racial background. And that is like a WhatsApp group where we regularly share information about what's happening. And it's really great that we've got like over 200 people part of that group. And it's just a regular networking group where you can post opportunities, post what you're doing. And in that way, the information, if someone sees an opportunity or call out, it doesn't stay with them, but it actually goes to this many people. But yeah, my plans are to further see how I can develop that group as well and see what we can do, like, to further.
Yeah. Do you have any upcoming projects or collaborations that you're excited about that you'd like to share with our listeners? Do you have any goals that you have in mind or future that you, you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I think there's a few projects that I haven't like signed the contract yet. So, they are in the pipeline, but waiting until everything is confirmed. And I think in the most things I guess I'm looking forward to is like really researching and exploring. As like I've been creating quite a bit last year, and I think sometimes it's really nice to just refuel and go back to that square one of being like, actually I don't know anything in this area. Let me develop my understanding of that. So yeah, I'm currently at that phase. And I think that's quite exciting with like the planning phase as well, to be like, well, I'm in a dreaming sort of state where, yeah, trying to see what I can dream, but also dreaming at a time constraint, because you can't dream forever. It's a dream for and then try and do. I'm currently looking forward to seeing what can be like actualized and brought into realization practically.
To have a place for people to come and see your work, is it Instagram, or is it, do you have a YouTube channel, or is it some place that people can see you perform in some way online? Because we do have quite a global audience, so it's difficult to kind of see you in person, I guess. But do you have any space online?
Yeah, I think the best place, like, I have my website and also Instagram. I feel Instagram is a good way just to keep up to date with what's happening. I try to share as much as I can. Slowly just getting my YouTube channel like updated over these next few weeks. So that should be there if anyone wants to check out my work on there. But otherwise, yeah, at the moment touring, there will be some touring work that I do in the UK in February, with a company called Thick and Tight, but you know, more dates to be released soon. And there is some other stuff later in the year, which will be announced at a later date. But Instagram's probably the best, like,
Keep up
place for information, I'll be making a newsletter as well in the new year. So
nice.
Finding up to that.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the EKV podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The EKV podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at EKV.